Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today I am joined by Leon van der Paul. He is the founder of the Center for Transformational Coaching and the author of the book, A Shift in Being, The Art and Practices of Deep Transformational Coaching, which is selling in multiple languages. And we're going to get right into the nature of transformational coaching today. I really appreciated Leon's depth of practice and experience and wisdom that shone forth in this conversation. So we'll get into topics like, what is our role as a space holder? How can we begin to see that in a way that affords us holding a more potent space for our clients? We'll talk in depth about the journey of healing and transformation and how healing has a valid place inside of coaching. We'll talk about being with pain and how we can deepen our attunement. If you'd like to join our ever-growing global community of transformational coaches, you can head to coachesrising.com and just put your name in the sign-up box you find there, and you'll stay in the loop about all the cool things that we create. Let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Leon van der Paul. Before we get into today's podcast, I've got an invitation for you. We're about to kick off the sixth edition of our most popular program, The Neuroscience of Change. This training is based on what revolutionary research in neuroscience has revealed about transformational coaching, essentially showing us what works, what doesn't, and why. In the program, you'll learn what happens in the brain and body when different coaching techniques are used, how to guide your clients into positive learning states that allow genuine change to occur, and why some tried and true coaching methods actually inhibit change and what we can do instead. We created this course because I learned things from the lead teacher, Amanda Blake, that truly revolutionized the way I coach. And every year, she and all the teachers bring in new, cutting-edge science that continues to illuminate the process of transformation. Amanda will be joined by the rest of our world-class faculty of coaches and neuroscientists for this program, including Dan Siegel, Alan Fogel, Claire Dale, David Trelevin, and Richard Boyatzis. It's going to be an amazing, transformative journey, so I hope you'll come and join us. You can head to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. The first class is February 25th, 2025 with Amanda Blake. And if you sign up by February the 7th, you can get the early bird discount. So just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. Leon, it's really good to be with you today. You know, I've got this really great sense. I knew it from finding your work that there would be kind of kindred spirits in this work as transformational coaches. And so welcome to the podcast. And how are you doing?
Very well and very happy to be here. Absolutely. I've enjoyed our pre-chat already. So I'm looking forward to where this deeper conversation is going to go.
Yeah. Maybe I'll start to record the pre-chats and put them out as a kind of like bloopers. They're not quite bloopers, but I often find they can be sometimes like the really rich part of the connection. So, but I'd love to ask you about your work. You've created a body of work around transformational coaching, and you've got a book out, A Shift in Being. Can you tell us what transformational coaching is for you?
That's the big question. And it's one of the questions that I speak to early in the book, because as I went through my own coach development in the early years, I noticed that there was no fixed definition of it in the marketplace. And it seemed like one of those words that anybody could attach to anything to make it sound really good. You know, transformational leadership, transformational coaching, transformational organizations. You know, you could attach it to just about anything. And it didn't really seem to matter what you were actually doing. You could just call it transformational work. So there came a point when I thought, maybe it's time to really look at what this word means and to really look what it means in a coaching context. And I'm not saying that my definition of it is the definitive definition, but I wanted to put at least something around it to give it a sense of actual solidity versus just this kind of everyday usage where it then dilutes the actual meaning of the word. When I look at transformation of the human being, so let's call it the inner world of the human being, transformation is for me a radical or revolutionary restructuring of our sense of self and our purpose and place in the world. Mm-hmm. So it's revolutionary. It's not just minor change. And it's not necessarily just maturation and growth, which we all experience. It's a restructuring of our sense of self. And when I say sense of self, I come to the psychological word, the self concept. So our self concept is a learned, sometimes called conditioned, set of beliefs, values, opinions, ideals that we have been taught, usually in our early upbringing, is true about who we are and the way that life is and the way that life works. You know, with family cultures and societal cultures and national cultures, we see the, you know, through these cultures, we see how we become conditioned, and we are immensely conditioned human beings. But transformation sometimes begins with what people call an awakening, like a sense that there's something more to who I am than I have been taught, that I've been conditioned to believe, that there's something more to life that I have been taught to believe is true. And then something starts to give within. And this leads people down this journey that I call the transformational journey, where they begin to really question and look at all of these pieces that have been taught and conditioned to them about who they are and the way life is, and to make real choice around that. Doesn't mean they discard everything, but everything becomes kind of illuminated and up for exploration and examination. And what happens is there becomes this restructuring away from what we might call our ego-based self-concept, which is often what forms during childhood as the ego begins to recognize that it has to survive in this world, and we develop all kinds of mechanisms to make sure that we as an organism survive. And we revolutionize this sense of self towards something that we could say is more reflective of the deepest or highest self or our soul. So there's this massive restructuring that happens within in this idea of who I am and what is true, what is meaningful, and what is real. And to me, that's what transformation is. And it's a journey. It's a journey. For most human beings, it's a journey that can last a decade, 15 years, a lifetime, because there's no real sense of what it ends. But there's a real sense of when you're in it. So, yeah.
Therefore, are you working with clients, and I know you train coaches as well, to explicitly work with people who are feeling called to that journey? Or are you applying this journey we can go through to awaken in this way to all kinds of people who might be, for example, leaders in organizations, executives who, you know, they're struggling with being a leader, running a team, those kinds of topics as well?
Yes. Yeah, it's a good question, because it's one that a lot of people do ask us as well. You know, how do you apply this work? So on one level, the ideal person that comes to this work, the ones who come to the center, the ones who are really called to this work as transformational coaches or deep coaches, as we call it, are themselves on this journey of transformation. There's no question that there's a kind of sweet spot with the work in terms of its application, that as people begin to awaken, they're really called to explore themselves at these very profound levels, but they're also sometimes called to understand how to work with others in the same way. They don't just want to do coaching at the shallow end. They don't want it to be all transactional, sometimes not even kind of developmental coaching. They really want to go deep with people. They're called to it because that's where they are themselves in their own life experience. But there is room for application of others. But what I've noticed is you cannot force upon people who are not ready for this work, this work. There has to be a readiness for it to some degree. When you try to force it, it's the people just, they don't get it. They don't get where this is coming from. They have different ideas about the way life is and the way that they should achieve things or accomplish things or make things happen. And it often is much more linear, more transactional, more surface level kind of approach to life. So you can't just take this body of work and say, well, I'm going to transform you because I, the transformational coach who loves going deep, shall go deep with you because that's what I love. Like, the moment that happens, you're not meeting the person where they're at. You're trying to impose upon them a way of thinking, living, perceiving that is true for you, but may not yet be true for them. So part of our work is to spot when a person's really ready for these really deep dives into their self-concept, into their sense of self and being. But on the other hand, and so this is what we say to coaches who work in the corporate world, if you really go on your own journey of transformation, the way that you show up in the world changes. And the way that you show up in the world changes means that everywhere you go, no matter what room you're in, no matter who you're sitting with, the quality of you is different. The quality of your being is different. And there is something I call the resonant potential in that. And what the resonant potential means that there's an implicit, means it's not spoken. There's an implicit invitation to join me in this more expansive way of being. So from that, you will notice that people who are in your presence, interestingly, start to, without really seemingly prompted to, want to go a little deeper. And I've had so many clients over the years who are like this, who would just say, Leon, why is it every time we get together, we go so deep? And I'm not trying to force deep. I'm not trying to make them see differently or act or think differently than they are. But there's just something when you sit in this kind of way that invites depth of perception of self and life, that people will join you there because there is a curiosity. There's a part of them that wants to understand. So that's kind of how it works. It still has application, these broader contexts, even if there is not necessarily a readiness as defined by the transformational journey.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Before we get into the specifics of the transformational journey, do you think that collectively right now there is a need and a growing interest in this type of transformation? It's one of the things we've explored a lot on the podcast, you know, as we've, you know, this idea that maybe modernity has a particular notion of who the human being is and what life is, and maybe has kind of emphasized the reductionist worldview of fixed parts and privileged analysis and rationality. And there's great gifts in analysis and rationality, but that maybe it's insufficient in order to navigate the kind of breakdown of modernity that we might be going through. I think I'm pretty confident to say we are, but
yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts, Joel, because this sounds like something you've given some thought to yourself.
Yeah. That's kind of the premise from where I'm asking the question, really, is I my sense is there is a growing almost like necessity. Like I totally agree with what you're saying. It's like, it's not about forcing anything on anyone. And even I'm reluctant to say to get caught in like, this is better than where you are and all that kind of thing. But at the same time, it does seem like I'm meeting more and more people who just feel increasingly disturbed and like that sense of everything being okay that they could kind of like convince themselves of they can't anymore. So there's these deeper questions and calling towards a journey. And then from that place of awakening, where certain capacities come online, where we're not located within our egoic tendencies, acknowledging that some ego functioning is necessary and important. But that creativity and resilience and capacity to lead and collaborate isn't going to come from that place. So my sense is, it's like collectively we're drawn to that.
There's you know, been for a while now, this idea that we are collectively going through a transformation. Not just as an individual process, but as a collective process. And one of the things I've noticed is that people don't necessarily understand the dynamics of transformation. It's not something we're taught in school. Like, this is what transformation looks like. It's messy. It's disruptive. It's open-ended. It's full of uncertainty. It feels like things are falling apart. There's a collapse going on. So what we're taught is, you know, when things are falling apart, there's a collapse going on. This is not good. If you're feeling uncomfortable, not good. Need to solve this thing away to get back to feeling comfortable, certain, solid, stable. But what happens when transformation as a process, individually or collectively, is inherently disruptive, inherently a collapse of an old system of thought or consciousness? What happens then? And this is what I suspect a lot of people are sensing, maybe on a personal level. They may not be seeing it collectively, but there is this collapse of a certain set of norms, concepts. You call it modernity, a way of believing the world is, it should be. And we've built entire systems upon it. Systems of war, systems of healthcare, systems of finance, all built on this old kind of structure of the way things are. And what happens when that inherently needs to collapse? And this is what transformation requires, a collapse so that there's an emergence of something new, but it can't emerge until we've had the collapse. But if you don't know that this is the dynamic, then it intends to cause people to feel fear. They become afraid. And then we see a lot of fear and discomfort and questioning on individual level and in societal level. And if we can step back enough, we can say, but yeah, this is the perfect functionality of transformation. It feels completely dysfunctional. But what if it's perfectly functional? How do we position ourselves then to steward this, right? To me, that's the big question. This is one of the questions that I think when people are, you know, questioning, as you said, the modernity and all of its kind of concepts of the way we should live, and feeling that, they are starting to come to the work more. Because if part of the work can show them how to be in the dynamics, then that gives them at least a sense of certainty, which we seem to crave amidst the uncertainty, to be able to normalize the dysfunction. But then also to teach people how to position themselves within it so that they can navigate this open-ended, disruptive, collapsing, yet emerging journey with the most, let's say, with the greatest amount of ease, the greatest amount of joy, the greatest amount of strength and empowerment, and not get sucked into the vortexes of doubt and uncertainty and fear. So if we can teach people these skills, which is part of what we do at the center in the program, if we can teach people these skills, then people can navigate this time, and we can do it individually and then learn how to do it collectively. Now, I'm not sure that quite answered your question, but yeah. Love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I want to ask you about how can we find that place of certainty, because that's a really interesting thing to say. And just, I'm really glad that you bring up the disturbance, because, you know, people on the podcast will have heard me talk about when I went through significant shifts in perception, changing perception and sense of self. Actually, it was a very dark period. It was very intense. And I experienced what I felt like was a dark night of the soul, everything deconstructed. And it led to an incredible place. But before that, it was very disturbing. And I must admit, I've still not fully landed in a sort of, how can I put it? The resolution of how, I think it comes back to what you said about if people feel that call, they feel that call and they want to do it. And then we need guides for that journey. But it's made me more humble about saying to people, you should embark on this journey, because there's no shoulds in, you know, it can be very disturbing. So yeah, that's what I come back to. So I'm glad you bring that in. I think it's important that becomes part of the discourse more as more and more people go through an awakening process. And I'm just curious, coming back to that sense of certainty that you described, where we can go through the process with more ease and maybe more joy. How do we, I mean, maybe this comes down to like, what is the transformational process then? How are you guiding people through that? How can you create that sense of certainty in the uncertainty?
Yeah, that's just it. So I love the metaphor. Well, it's not, it's a real thing, but it's also a metaphor of the caterpillar to the butterfly and that the cocooning process. And I mentioned this in my book as well, because it's such a perfect kind of fitting metaphor for what we experience as human beings. And it's this idea that the caterpillar creates the cocoon, but what happens inside the cocoon, like for the longest time, I thought that the caterpillar morphed into a butterfly, that there's a morphing process, like some shape-shifting wizardry. I was an adult when I found out that that's not actually what happens inside the cocoon. What happens is there is a death. So the caterpillar dies and it turns into this kind of primordial goo of death and decay. And then one day, inexplicably, and scientists call these cells imaginal cells, there's a ping, like a new cell just ping pops up. And immediately, because the immune system of the dying caterpillar sees that new cell as like an invader, the immune system dives on that new cell and snuffs it out. So there'll be none of that new cell popping up. But then ping, ping, and the same thing, the immune system of the dying caterpillar jumps on those new imaginal cells, snuffs them out. But ping, 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 ping. So soon, more of these imaginal cells are emerging than the immune system can snuff out. But the immune system is also slowly still collapsing as it dies, as the caterpillar dies, until the point comes when there are more imaginal cells than the immune system can snuff out. And these imaginal cells then begin to form cell clusters. And cell clusters then form into parts of the butterfly, like the antennae or the wings. And then those cell clusters join together. And soon we have this thing called a butterfly. So what I find fascinating about the metaphor is that inherently, the transformation cannot occur without two things. One, the cocoon. It is the safety protector around the whole process. But two, without the primordial goo of death and decay. In other words, that primordial goo is a soup that somehow, in some way, inexplicably gives rise to a cell that is a complete difference than all the other cells. And is seeing a possibility of selfhood that transcends whatever came before. And this is why I love the metaphor, because this is exactly for me what's going on. And you experienced it, right? That dark night of the soul is, in a sense, this feeling of like everything is collapsing to the point where it feels like death. Now, it's not necessarily dark for everybody, but there is certainly this period. So the two pieces that I want to point out to answer your question of what supports people through this is, one, the idea of the cocoon. So this is why we train deep transformational coaches, because it says that there's something in the partnership between a space holder, the creator of, let's call it the cocoon, and the holder of that, and the person who's going through this process within. There's an alchemical relationship, magical, that happens between these two components. So this idea that you have to do this journey alone is a myth. We have to recognize that there's something in this partnership, and we call it spiritual partnering at the center, but it's a partnership between that, the person who creates the space and holds the space, and the one who's going through the journey. That's the first. And the second is, we have to normalize the death process, and we have to normalize the emergence process. Like, both these processes, call it kind of a letting go of the old ways of being and the old patterns and thoughts and emotions and behaviors and attitudes that are of the egoic self, kind of letting come the emergence of this new sense of self, that who I am beyond all that I could conceive of before. So if we can normalize that for people and see that these are the dynamics we're working with while we're inside this cocoon, we begin to see the role of the deep transformational coach. Create the space, hold that space unwaveringly in great trust that the space itself is an absolutely key essential ingredient for this process of death and emergence to unfold. And it's got its own volition. This is what I love about it, is that, how do I say this? The transformational process has its own inherent volition. Like, it's happening. Once it's happened, it's happening. You can't put the brakes on this thing. Once you've seen beyond the veil, you're not going back. You know this. But we can get in our own way. Fear can get in the way. Doubt can get in the way. Uncertainty can get in the way. So the role then becomes to support a person to lean into those experiences, but then to be able to transcend those experiences, not forcing them, but to kind of get them out of the way, get them out of their own way, so that this self-volitional process of transformation can just do its thing in the awakening mind. So those are two big pieces that I play with in that work.
Totally agree with you that, once it's like in process, there's no going back.
There's no going back, no.
I want to, of course, we're going to get right into how we can be in spiritual partnership, but let's just talk for a moment about where the butterfly, in a sense, you know, like, what is the transformation into? Are we talking about, you know, awakening out of a separate sense of self, and awakening as awareness or consciousness? Or
what did you experience it as? Like, because you went through this. So for you, what was that sense? Because I'm sure in that collapse for you too, there was a sense of something's emerging in me. I don't know what it is. It may seem very far away at times, maybe even an impossibility, but there was, and you move through it.
So there's been stages of it, and it's a little bit vulnerable to talk about it in a sense. I haven't talked about it that explicitly, but well, for me, there was definitely different aspects of it. Like, but the one of the main things that emerged quite quickly was a lack of sense of solid sense of self. Later on, that clarified more and more into a kind of intimacy and immediacy with experience. But in the beginning, and I still have it, where it's like there's a sense of spaciousness where I experienced my sense of self to be. And then my sense of perceptions sort of changed from being like looking out, Joel looking out here on the world to a kind of perception which is occurring. This is a little bit difficult to put into words, but like everywhere and nowhere. And but like, and I agree what you said before. Like, I think from I went through maybe a very kind of intense disruptive phase, and I know people who've been through ones which are almost like half a day of disturbance, and then they're like on the other side. So it
I'd
doesn't, it can make it sound, but there was for me a deconstruction of the world of form for a period. Like, but it that was the part that was particularly unenjoyable. So everything became kind of even 2D like at some point. Like I might fall through the pavement. As if like the void was the most primary experience, and reality didn't exist, so it felt like it had gone too far, and that was a pretty bleak place to be inside of. And then that whole journey unfolded, and the world came back in. Yeah, so that's some
So
of the.
where did you land in terms of that, let's call it revitalized sense of self?
Yeah. What I should say is came after that was, well, first of all, the experience of radical intimacy, being awareness was like, this was really beautiful. Just the kind of luminosity of experience is just incredible. There's a kind of clarity of perception and beauty. But what I actually enjoyed more was just this sense of embodied wellness. I'd have these like it comes to the foreground and fades to the background, but this sense of well-being, just inherent well-being and contentment. It takes different forms, sometimes it just feels like almost like being on ecstasy. I used to do that drug when I was in my. Sometimes it feels different, but it's just this inherent sense of the struggle and the striving, that kind of knot is just gone, and there's like,
Now, I know exactly what you're speaking about. Not every moment of your experience has I shared in that way, but that sense of all is well with me and the luminosity, that word you used, luminosity of life, of experience, a sense of being extremely spacious and expansive and being part of life, not separate. Not separate. There's a real strong sense of unity with all things. That doesn't mean that that's there every moment of every day. And it doesn't ever mean that it's not disrupted by other thoughts. You cut me off in traffic and suddenly you cut me off, and there's no sense of unity in that moment. But exactly that's where we eventually can land. So thanks for sharing that, because it's an extraordinary journey for people to embark on.
And I don't know what you think about this. We're getting into the weeds a bit here, but these are the weeds that I love. What I found was there are actually very different views on awakening if you look in the different traditions, and that some are very sutric and kind of almost like they're emphasizing renouncing the world. It's all about the world of formlessness. And, you know, it's like formlessness, formlessness, formlessness. Oh, and then form at the end, just a little bit, you know. And so it has this kind of feeling of like the world is an illusion or samsara. And but actually when you, a lot of traditions are like that, maybe the majority that are popular. But if you look, there are other traditions which don't, which give equal weight to the relative world and the formless world, and they're kind of life affirming, and for me led to this sense of, no, I'm here not to transcend the world, but to refine myself and serve in the world. And that seems to fit with what maybe is needed in our times more, and the world of transformational coaching. So
I would fully align with that myself. It's been my very path from the beginning, I think, is to how do I serve in the world. And I don't ever want to impose upon people particular thoughts about how they should experience life or paths that they should take. And I don't ever say to people, no, you should think in terms of this way, or, you know, here's a text that might take you down that certain path towards that way of perceiving life. I don't ever impose. What I always want to do is find out from people, what is the experience of themselves and life that they want to be having? And just kind of sit in that. And for you and me, it sounds like it's never been about the monk's life, even though your name happens to be monk. It hasn't been about sitting in the cave at the top of the Himalayas and meditating 9 hours a day and being very disconnected and disowning the world or trying to see it for the illusion that it is. And some of those ideas, for me, it's always been about how do I live in this world and to live in a way that brings me a sense of real joy and fulfillment and peace at the highest level that I want to experience. And so that's what I invite people that I work with as well. It's just simply to ask them, what is it that you're really longing for in this world? And how do we make this a possibility for yourself? And so we go on this journey with them in any way that they feel called to. And that's all I ever did too. I went on a long journey myself throughout the world. I've traveled, I've lived in many countries. I've had many different kinds of experiences in all shapes and forms, from positive to negative, but they all shaped me. But they were all in this world. And I've loved being in this world. I love this world. It's extraordinary. No matter where I find myself, I sit in just awe at what life is. And I don't want to sit here and say, this is my own path, that this is an illusion. Sure, I can hold that thought. But I'd much rather sit in it all and just marvel at this. Let's call it marvel at the illusion, marvel at its beauty, marvel at its potentials. Because when we start to grasp just how much creative power we have, just how much we have been given resource-wise to navigate this life at an extraordinary level, once we realize that, we begin to actualize it, there's nowhere else I want to be except in this world. And I've never had to go through the process of renouncing it. What I've had to go through is a process of loving it, like loving life in all its flavors and forms. And sometimes that means loving what seems to be the unlovable in myself, in others, in the way that the world is. And the more that I can rest in this expansive space called love or love consciousness, the more everything just becomes, in a sense, beautiful, even what we might deem the ugly. You know, and that's a funny place to land because there's lots of things we can deem ugly and atrocious and horrific. But somehow, some way, when you land there, it just takes on a different vibration, a different perspective, a different tingle. I don't know how to really describe that. It shapeshifts in a different way in my perception. And that's the place I've always wanted to live. And that is deeply in this world. Now, my mom always used to like to say, yeah, I know you can be in this world, but not of this world. And I carry that thought of maybe I'm not of this world in the sense of we're part of something so vast. I sometimes can't get my head around the scale of the universe that we're living in. You know, every other week, the scientists seem to come back and say, you know, it's a lot bigger than we thought it was last time. Last time there were 19 billion galaxies. Well, now we've discovered there's 2 trillion galaxies and each galaxy is 300 to 400 million or billion stars. And that's just what we can see. And I sit back and think, so the scale of what we're a part of, you know, it's just magnificent. And all of this is technically illusion, you know, by some of these kind of teachings, it's all illusion. Well, I don't know. For me, it's fascinating. Stars, planets, galaxies, beauty beyond compare, things that we can't even conceive of exist in this physical realm. So I'm all about, let's go on a journey and understand how to live life within this at the highest level, from the highest sense of self, in love, if you will, with life.
I am going to ask you about this spiritual partnering, but just, I love what you're talking about now. Could you say a bit more about this highest level for you? I think you spoke about it when you said, like, there's this vibration of love and this kind of, like, I get this kind of energetic sense of like vibrancy and clarity. But could you say more about, yeah, what your experience is like?
I'll give some context first on a more structured intellectual level context. Have you heard of Dr. David Hawkins' work, possibly Power versus Force, Map of Consciousness?
Yeah, the levels of consciousness.
You got it right. Okay, so 20 years back, I first came across his work, and it really opened my mind to something. So one of the, I don't know, for those of you who not know this work, it's simply a map of the levels of human consciousness, let's say from the lowest level, which he labels as shame, like shame just being the absolute like place of self-loathing, to the highest levels of joy and enlightenment. And there's, I don't know, maybe 16 levels altogether. And what I love about this understanding of consciousness is that each level of consciousness has its own built-in reality. And therefore, if you shift a level of consciousness in one way or the other, up or down, you're going to immediately, because of its built-in nature, begin to perceive, feel, experience life at that level of consciousness. He said the challenge is that it's very, very hard for people to shift their native level of consciousness without very much a dedicated period of time to doing the inner work and really dedicating your life to the inner work to shift your state of consciousness and thereby shifting the paradigm of your experience. So most people are locked into a singular state of consciousness, completely oblivious to the reality that there are a whole scale of ways of experiencing life, both above where they are and possibly below where they are. They're just locked into that one perspective or one paradigm, and therefore believe that that's the reality that all people hold. But of course, that's just fiction. And if you exist at any other level, you've got a whole built-in reality there. So the thing that also stood out for me is that at the higher levels, the level of reason comes just before the level of love. So rationality, pure crystalline rationality, let's say mathematics, is a beautiful, very high, powerful field of consciousness. And let's call it a field of intelligence. But above that, the next level is love. And Hawkins wrote in his book, he says, many of the greatest thinkers, the greatest minds that our world has ever known, have never been able to get to love because they get stuck in reason. Because reason is itself a high level of consciousness, pure crystalline reason. And when you get that intellectual mind kind of locked in to just exploring the boundaries of reason, it can be very hard to transcend from a linear world to love, which is a very high level of human consciousness, and it is a non-linear world. And of course, it is a field of consciousness and a field of intelligence. And so this is where I like to start, because sometimes people think, oh, love, you know, it's all this woo-woo, feel good, my heart. And oh, that's a part of it possibly for some, but it's its own field of consciousness and therefore its own built-in reality. So therefore, if you think about it, everything that we know in this world can exist in love consciousness, just as it might exist in reason. So let's say economy. When we build economy out of reason versus when we build economy out of love, what changes? Different paradigms of reality, both have economy. So a lot of people say to me, well, you know, if I go down this path of spiritual calling, I'm going to be poor. I mean, look at everybody who goes down this path, is they have to give up the world, forsake money. There's no money in the spiritual world. It's like, yes, there is. Economy exists at every level of consciousness. It's just completely configured differently. So to come back to your question of what the experience is that I've experienced these higher levels as both a sense of feeling of self and as a field of intelligence. It's like there's a whole paradigm of ways to think within this field that we're calling love. So this is where it gets really tricky to put words to the experience, because, and we've used some of these words before, you even said some of the two, but there's a sense of great spaciousness. There's a great sense of connection. There's a great sense of being well within the self. And there's a great sense that we are the absolute creators of our experience. And therefore, it always is the invitation. What is the experience you want to create now? What is the experience you want to create now? And now, and now, and now, and now. There's always this invitation. And what I feel is that with love, the experience is to experience love as a unifying field where there is less sense of separation, which is really my ego, isn't it? My ego is just always saying, you're over there, Joel, I'm over here. We're not connected. We're separate. That's my egoic consciousness. And it has value because it gives me a sense of self-identity. And I can navigate this world like as an individual. But love also just immediately says, do you feel the connection? Can you attune to this person? Can you sense their deeper reality? Because it's shared. It's within this field. And the moment then you begin to perceive that everything around you is connected to you, and you see the systemic nature of all of life, no matter how far away we are absolutely connected and it's energetic. Then we begin to understand our creative powers differently. Well, then how do I want to create with this, knowing that I am connected to all things, and I feel that affinity, that kinship with all of life. How do I really want to create? And it's coming from this sense of goodness and rightness and truth and beauty. That's where it's all coming from. There's no sense of wanting it to be other than that. No sense of me needing to control. And I can still have all the material things that perhaps I desire to experience. Because again, the question is, what do you want to experience? Well, I want to experience millions of dollars in the bank. Great, have that experience. Well, what happens when that comes from love? You know, it's not separate. It's not like, well, that's separate. Money, millions of dollars cannot be loving. But what if it can? And then what happens to the experience of creation of that wealth? How does it change from just going for it because your ego wants to keep yourself feeling secure, safe, or important? What changes? So I know it's a bit hard to put words to this, but it's kind of that.
Do you, I imagine that influences the way you coach in terms of, well, have you asked yourself the question, like, what's the experience I want to create as a coach?
Always. Absolutely. I mean, that's how I prepare for every session. This comes back to what we were speaking about before we started, this idea of the developmental edge, is that when I get that sense of losing that edge, I have to come back to my deepest intention of creation of experience for myself and the other. And I will spend time in preparation before every session reaffirming that truth for myself so that I can create that in the session with this person.
Yeah, I love that you bring this up because that's something I was reflecting on. It's so common, I think, that coaches think about what experience do I want to create for my clients, but actually to think about what experience do I want to create for myself is incredibly potent.
Yes.
And it brings that kind of magic and joy back in immediately, you know, because like, so you brought in the developmental edge piece, you know, I've been thinking about this and I noticed that if I move away from that edge, it's like my coaching loses its, you know, its mojo a little bit. It's magic and I'm going through the motions a little bit. So that question that you bring in there is a great one for coming right back to that edge where you're right in that vibrational frequency of transformation and unfoldment.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the intention, right? So the people that I'm working with are generally on this journey of transformation. So there's a sense, because I've been there myself and through it, but that's a sense I know what they're seeking. I know what they're seeking at the core level of being, not just at the moment they come into the session and say, well, I have this problem and I want to find some way through it. But at the core level of soul, I know what they're seeking because it's what my soul seeks and has once spent a great deal of time seeking. So then the intention is, because that's the experience I want to have. I want to have one that is rich in soul, rich in energy, rich in possibility, rich in healing, whatever it may be. I want to do all of that. And that's for me. But I know because I'm sitting in this space of what is me is you and what is you is me and we are one together, it's for all. And that's, to me, the ultimate coaching experience, is when the two become as one in the coaching experience.
What's guiding you as you're with someone? I know that's a big question, and that, you know, every moment is unique. But I'm just wondering if there's like general principles that are guiding you as a coach, you know, that you're attuning to, that are allowing for transformational coaching to happen. And I know in a way many of the things we've talked about already are that, but yeah.
Yeah. So we work with 9 practices in our programs in the book as well. And the 6th practice is attune to your client's deeper sense of self and let that lead. So what does that mean then, to attune to another person's deeper sense of self and then to let that lead the session? That's the big learning for people. It's a pretty intensive practice, and it's a bit out there for most people at the beginning. But yeah, the idea of your question was, what's guiding me? So the first thing that I want to have guide me is my sense of that person's deeper sense of self and what they are ready for and what they want to have happen in the session. So that requires me to be a whole lot less in my intellect, because if I'm in my intellect, I'm thinking, what's my next question? Thinking about, what did they just say that I need to break down? Thinking about, what's something that they said that I might not understand, which I want to go deeper on? So there's a lot more cognitive processing that happens. But for me to really attune to their deeper self and to let that lead me and lead us, I have to listen differently. I have to listen more from a more embodied state. I have to listen more from my own deeper sense of self. I have to listen with more of a, let's say, open heart and less of an open intellect kind of thing. And when I do that, so often I'm sitting in my sessions, like literally like this, with my hands up, my eyes closed, and my head back, in kind of this open energetic position, so that I can do that sensing better. It seems to then evoke something in the person, and then I pick that up, and that then leads the session. But there are times when I don't really know what to do, and I don't really know where to go, and I'm a little perhaps befuddled by what's in front of me. So the second thing I do is I'm very spiritually attuned. So I say, I invite spirit in. Now, I don't define spirit for people. They can define it any way they want. But let's just call it this greater intelligence, greater consciousness, evolutionary consciousness that exists in and through and around all of us. And I just make a conscious invitation, like, show me what I need to do. Show me what I need to say. Where does this need to go? And then I just sit back and kind of let that inform me. And invariably, something shows up. Something just comes into my field of awareness. And then I move with that. And I just trust it. So it's a very much a trusting space, because you never really know if it's right or not right. It doesn't, you have to let go of that idea so that the session can unfold versus be driven somewhere. And that's the difference between a more transactional session and a transformational, is one is an unfolding and the other is more, here's the objective, let's get there. And transformational, they might state an objective, but invariably, because we're dealing with the unfolding of the deeper self, it'll take us into places that we may not be able to perceive before we began.
Yeah, this is, I think, I love this topic. This is, for me, at the edge of what's emerging in coaching, this way of being with people and, you know, moving out of like what I would call structural coaching or transactional coaching, where, you know, there's that deploying of a method to try and get to a certain place. And instead there's this, you know, clarifying one's perception and attuning, and that word unfoldment, you know, really touches me. And there's a sense of life, like dynamic intelligence that kind of comes into the coaching.
Yes.
And you don't have to, you don't know where it's going to go, and it's but you feel it, you know, you feel it when it's there, and it's as if the client's new way of being is actually coming through that unfoldment and intelligence, rather than
exactly
trying to make something happen. And it's
exactly
a completely different way of being as a coach, and I personally find infinitely more rewarding.
You spot on. That's exactly the experience I've had, and so many of our students have had too. infinitely more rewarding. But again, they have to be ready for that. And so that's what they have to want for themselves, in a sense, as an experience. And then when they want that for themselves, an experience, they are willing to bring that to clients as an experience. And some people I've discovered on this path of coaching and life are just not yet ready. They still like the more structured, methodological kind of approach to things. They still say, show me the steps, show me the model, help me walk me through it. It's like, okay, that's what they're ready for, and that's what they're ready to create with others, and that's perfectly okay. But the evolution of a coach to what we might call mastery, if that is such a thing, that seems to entail a paradigm shift in how we show up in the session towards what we're talking about here, the unfolding of something that's itself inherently generative. It's inherently producing what is needed, known, needs to be known, needs to be understood. It's inherently producing evolution versus the driving, forcing, make it happen. So we have so many students that finish the course and say, oh, my clients want to do transactional, but I don't want to go there anymore. It's like, yeah, but you can't force people to go there. If those are the people you're working with, you have to learn to show up for them and still understand the experience that they want to have. Like, that's still part of the coaching thing. I might set the intention of my own experience, like, this is what I desire, but I'm still listening for what you want. And I'm still saying, I'm the coach for you, and I can help you achieve that experience. Or I have to say, maybe I'm not the coach for you, because that's not the experience I want for myself, nor that I want to create for others.
My sense is more and more people are going to be drawn to this way of coaching, because it's part of that transition that we've talked about at the start of our conversation. You know, if I'm, I kind of see myself as something that needs to perfect itself, to struggle, to get to that place over there where I'll be okay and be successful, then it makes sense to do transactional coaching in a way. Although, you know, I'm careful here, because, you know, there are powerful forms of transactional coaching. I don't want to completely denigrate it, but
no, that's the thing. It's not about denigrating any form of coaching, right? They all have purpose and place.
Yeah. And there just seems to be something about seeing individuals as complex biological entities and not complicated machines that, you know, with parts that, you know, we can do some of the, that's just the way it feels sometimes with some of these processes, where they feel more mechanical. And I wonder about the role I know you write about healing and being with pain and grief. And I think this is also something that's at the edge of coaching now, that's coming in. How can we, if we're doing transformational work, see that pain and healing is a place for therapists, whilst acknowledging our competency and where we're comfortable going and not re-traumatizing people? That's essential. But what for you is the necessity of embracing our pain, being with grief, and the need, the role of awakening that I find allows for that to happen more potently, rather than, you know, being in this place of lack and parts, and that's where we're trying to fix ourselves from, and that agenda never works. So
exactly, yeah, that's exactly it. Awakening and transformation as a journey inherently demands that we look at the shadowy parts of ourselves, our pain body, our, what I call our personal gravity, which can be anything from negative thoughts, limiting self-beliefs, false self-images, addictions, you know, the whole range of things that, like the shadow side, which could be, that's psychological term, shadow side, including things like greed, anger, ambition, you know, all those shadowy parts of ourselves. Wow, transformation is just, you're going to look at these things. You don't have a choice. You're not going to go where you want to go unless you're willing to reveal and open those cupboards, shine the light on those parts of yourself. And so this is where healing comes in for me, because healing, so there's a couple of images of healing. The one, and then you talk to it, this idea of mechanical healing is the idea of fixing ourselves. if I could fix this part of me, then I will return to some kind of normality and I will be healed. It's like I break my arm and then I just fix it. I heal it and then I'm okay again. But it's returning to a kind of status quo. I'm returning to the normal in me. But in transformational work, healing is not return to status quo. Healing is transcendence of status quo. So I redefine it a bit differently. I refine it as recognition of our essential nature, recognition of our true self and purpose and place in this world. It's a peeling away of all that prevents us from recognizing essential truth of selfhood, like who I am at the core of my being. Once I strip away all that is not who I am at the core of my being. So as I strip away all that is not who I am, I begin to simply naturally perceive the ever existing, the ever existential truth of who I am. And that's solid, that's real, that's unwavering part of who we are. So that's what I call healing. Healing is a movement towards recognition of our wholeness and completion. Okay. So with that in mind, that's not this idea that I have to fix anything, but I do have to attend to the shadow side. I have to attend to that which is holding me down energetically, vibrationally. The thought patterns, as I said, the limiting self-images, the false beliefs. Like, for example, you're going to come face to face with things like, I'm not good enough, or I'm not safe in this world. From a young age, I was taught, I'm not good enough. That's the truth that I carry in every single cell. I'm not speaking about me, by the way. This is a typical kind of confrontation of this existential reality that from a very young age, I was taught I'm not good enough. And now today as an adult, I'm sitting in this recognition that there's no cell in my body that does not carry that belief. It's so deep. It's deep in my subconscious mind and it's alive in me. And these are the hardest things for people to outwork, to heal. I'm not good enough. I'm not safe. I'm not lovable. I'm not loved. These kinds of core beliefs. So there's a question, well, then if something is wedded to your very self identity, it's alive in every cell in your body and has been for 30 years. How do you let that go? Do you think it's really just a matter of asking a few powerful questions? And it's just somehow magically dissolved from the totality of your mind and consciousness. That's fiction. But some coaching approaches would say that's what you do. If you say, I'm not good enough, you ask a powerful question so that they shift their perspective to see all the ways that they are good enough. But that doesn't outwork something that is literally wedded to the fabric of your self-identity. It does not. So then there's this question of, well, but then what does a healing journey look like to really, truly let this shit go, because it serves no purpose any longer where I sense I'm going. So this is how I contextualize healing within a coaching context. It's not therapeutic. Transformation, sorry, I shouldn't say that. It's not therapy, but it is therapeutic, because transformation demands, like, you're not going anywhere. You're not going to that transcendent state, no matter how much you kid yourself, until you face the shadowiest parts of yourself and heal yourself, heal thyself. And once you do that, once you start to really let go of those crusty layers of your egoic shell, you'll begin to perceive an existential truth that is beyond it all. And then that will start to shine more brightly within the self. And that then starts to become its own kind of impetus for ongoing growth. But until we've dealt with the shadows, you're going to kind of feel stuck. So that's how I position healing. It's part of transformational work, and transformational coaches need to understand how to work with it in a coaching context.
Yeah. How do you train coaches to do that? I think it's fundamentally important. How do you
Right.
teach them to support people to heal, to integrate those beliefs?
Right. So there, I mentioned the 9 practices. So the 7th practice is expand your capacity to be with pain and allow healing moments. So there's 2 parts to that. The first part is my own capacity as a coach to be with pain. So what pain does in all of us is it triggers the kind of fight or flight mechanism. often people just want to get away from it. So we see a whole in modernity again. Just numb yourself. Turn on Netflix. Have a smoke. Have a couple of drinks. You know, light up, whatever. We numb ourselves. And that's how we get through life. It's kind of coping with it. But the coach too, if they haven't done their own work to be with their own pain, when they're faced with the pain of another, will often do something to shut it down in the session. They'll ask an intellectual question. They'll divert the conversation in another way. What can you do about this? How can you solve this? How can you make this go away? Because of their own natural discomfort of simply being with another person's pain, which often stems from their own inability to be deeply with their own. So the practice is to expand, to recognize our kind of outer limit or upper limit of our comfort in being with our own pain and with others' pain, and do the work to expand that. And once we start to expand that, we can then invite people to simply be with pain without it needing to be different than it is, without needing to solve it, fix it, or make it go away. Just the capacity to be with it, no matter how painful it is. That's the first piece of it. And then the second piece is allow healing moments. So a healing moment is nothing more than an experience in the session of being with pain and perhaps a sense of just wanting to release that, just a kind of letting go, a shedding, if you will. But I don't want the coaches to think that they have to be doing anything. I don't want the coaches to think they have to have all these modalities that they have to understand about how to help that person heal. What I want the coach to do is simply become an extraordinary container, a cocoon, a healing. They are the healing space. And that's all they have to do is be the healing space, which often means, first of all, centering in the heart, becoming a loving presence, opening up kind of a vibrational channel to the person to just allow them to lean in and be with. Often silence comes in, deep, rich, what I call sacred silence, which feels like everything's happening and nothing's being said, but everything is happening. And they'll notice just this energetic movement happening in that cocoon of silence and spaciousness and allowing and being with that is immensely healing for people. It's in those spaces, without having to think about healing, that healing naturally penetrates every cell in our body, every aspect of mind. We are simply being with and allowing to dissipate the grip of these old crusty pieces of our sense of self. And that's all the coach has to do, but you wouldn't believe how difficult it is to get the coach there. So this is why in our work, we always say the coach has to work on themselves first. It's all your own transformation enables transformation. You can only hold space for someone in their pain to the degree that you can hold space for yourself in your pain. Otherwise, you become like a therapist, perhaps sitting on the couch with your notepad back turned, letting the person cry, but you are detached. You shall not feel the winds of their emotion. You shall not feel the winds of their pain. And it's not to say that the coach is supposed to get wrapped up in it. It's not. It's not such a degree of empathy that you take on in other persons. It's that you become a channel for something greater than and allow them to be that within that greater context or cocoon that we're calling love.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but let me know.
Crystal clear. And I feel a deep resonance. I've often held this, I want to say a metaphor, but it's not, it's an energetic almost transmission of being a container, you know, like that's how I felt as a coach. And so when I hear you articulate it in this way, I feel really moved because you know, there is a transmission of that state of acceptance and being the cocoon, and whether our clients maybe feel that consciously or not, that it will have an impact on them. And, you know, that capacity to just be with that pain for it to be felt and metabolized in its own, yes, its own volition, not as something, a change agenda that we're imposing upon our experience, which can then come from our parts or our ego, is really crucial. And in the age where AI coaching will come in more, I think will be one of the capacities which will differentiate AI coaching from human coaching. You know, it's at least as I see it right now, AI won't be transmitting those states of.
I can't see it happening within the next, 50 years, 100 years. There's something in the human experience that transcends what at least AI can do today. So you're right. And it is a kind of transmission, a transmission of something that is beyond all of us. And it is, I've noticed, very perceptible for clients too. They don't always know what's going on. And I think the coach doesn't always know what's going on. I don't ever pretend that I understand the workings of consciousness, but I can feel it and I can see the outcome. And there's something just extraordinary when people just allow themselves to be in and feel and to know it's okay. Stop trying to run away from it. Stop trying to fix it.
Yeah, one of the people I've learned a lot from, Thomas Hubel, talks about how, you know, it's like we perceive things as being in the way, you know, like, oh, when I get through this to that other place, then I'll be okay. But actually, this thing that's here is the way. That is the thing to be felt, and it has its own intelligence to it. Like it served you at some point, and now it's the thing to be met that can metabolize so that you can build that container within which, you know, awakening can land more stably. That's something that comes up as you speak, and I'm curious. You know, there's so many questions I have, and I know we're kind of coming. Like, I do want to ask a couple more questions. One is about like almost like the sense of a session that you do. In a way, I'm kind of combining like almost like the arc of a journey and the arc of a single session. What I'm curious about in that is like how you invite people on this transformational journey. So, would you train coaches to introduce people to, you know, through guided meditations to consciousness itself? Would you, begin by inviting the client to, you know, just explain, well, what's alive for you today? And
yeah,
in a sense, I'm curious about how you invite people into this transformational journey.
Well, the people that are often coming to me in particular, and again, to the center, are people who are already on this journey. That's why I suspect they're called to the work in some form. What they need more, it seems, is permission to be on the journey in ways that they may not know intuitively or even through thinking that they can be on this journey. And we talked about the healing piece of it. People don't necessarily recognize that there's a need for them to lean into their shadowy parts. They're very aware that they're showing up, but they have no clue what to do with it. And there's sometimes a sense too that, well, this thing called the transformational journey is a phase, a stage in one's greater existence with its own dynamics. And that too can become an educational piece. So I have found that there is help. It does help to educate, if you will. I don't do a lot of it, and maybe let's call it mentoring, but there is a need to support people to see themselves within a greater context. And that then normalizes their experience for them, allowing them to lean into it more. So that happens too in a coaching session. If at first the person isn't necessarily sure what I do with this, the coach may need to just gently come in and say, okay, let's just sit with that for a minute. It's okay to be in silence, or it's okay for you to cry, or it's okay for you to feel emotion. Just a normalizing of things that has to happen periodically. And then that can be shared within the greater context at times. So why are we okay sitting in silence? And why does it help for us to just listen to our deeper self? Or why? Because we're on this thing called the journey. So some of that mentoring, if you will, educational piece is really, really helpful for clients. It's almost like they then take a breath of like, oh my God, this is okay. It's okay for me to feel this way. It's okay for me to do this. It's okay for me to not have to talk in a session. I thought we're here to talk. I said, well, what if we don't? Well, I don't really feel like talking. What if we just sit in silence? Yeah, all right. Yeah, we'll just see what comes up. How about we do that? So this is what I mean. There is a sense of inviting people into it. But as a coach, you have to know it yourself. And this is why we teach it. Because if you're not aware that these things are possible for yourself as a coach, then you're not going to invite people into that experience. And silence is a great example. Like, most people have no clue. No clue. Sit in silence. If I'm sitting in silence, I'm not doing anything. Like, really? What if you were doing everything in silence? Kind of thing, right?
Yeah, beautiful. I have a spiritual mentor, and I just think half the time we just sit in silence, sometimes for half an hour.
Yes.
And it's incredibly powerful. And so what I'm curious about is, so I love what you talk about education, because that is crucial. I think it can set a context and a kind of, like you said, normalize for people. If people, like, awakening isn't a common thing, it's not known about the aspects of it. So for people,
exactly,
you know, like, that normalizing and contextualizing is so crucial. And then from there, that can bring up more questions. So I'm imagining for you, like, what I'm wondering is, do you like what I found in my coaching is, it's really powerful to just be with what's here now.
Yes.
You know? And that's one of the guiding principles. It's like letting things be. One of my mentors, Steve March, you know, this notion he taught of, like, letting things be as they are, and then they'll unfold. So just being with helping my client be with their experience right now. And then you don't know what will come up, but that's where that unfolding process starts, which might, as they're being with their experience, they might notice pain. They might notice, yes, grief. They might notice their deepest heart's desire. They might notice a quality of presence. Do you find a similar kind of thing happening in the way you
train? Absolutely. You know, this is where some of these kind of core competency ideas of what it means to be a coach, of how we contract and how we drive a session, have to be let go of. There's an unlearning of some of these more conventional notions of what it means to be a coach, so that you can be with whatever is arising in the moment. Even when I work with people long term, I like to think that every session stands on its own.
Right.
Yes. Of course, we're connecting a life along the way, but every session, it's very immediate, as in, what's happening with you now? What is arising for you now? What's the experience you're seeking now? What is it you want to unpack or lean into now? All those kind of questions, very present, very in the moment. And I love that place of dance. I absolutely love it. It feels very freeing and liberating, because then I can just meet the person right where they're at and create that cocoon. And at the same time, kind of listen very deeply to these emerging pieces of selfhood, and perhaps nurture them forward a little bit through my presence, through my words, whatever it may be. And that's, for me, the magical coaching place. But as I said, a lot of people have to unlearn more conventional ways of coaching. And there is, I mentioned this earlier with the silence piece, they'll start to question their value. Like, how can this be valuable? Am I offering value if I'm not getting that aha moment, that breakthrough moment, that, you know, the session came out with this thing, and then I feel validated in my work? They have to work through all of that, because that's what prevents the coach, this need for validation of their worth, that prevents them from just being with what's right there immediately. And sometimes that means for them just being the spacious container for whatever's arising, and very much doing little, or at least perceptibly doing little, but maybe that's everything that's needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a crucial part of the journey of becoming a transformational coach, I imagine, where, yeah, people can then fully be in what's emerging in the unknown.
Yes.
Because otherwise you're caught in an agenda of, like, providing value, and that's going to color your perception. It's going to create tension.
Oh, yeah.
The two questions I have like still floating around inside of me somewhere, which and I know we and I want to ask where we can find out more about your work. So I'm going to invite you to bring like a pithy response to each one is I meant to ask this earlier, but you talked about you wrote down attuning to your client's deepest sense of self. How do you know when you are attuned to that deeper sense of self? Like, what tells you that?
That's a really hard one. That's a really hard question to answer. And that's a bit of the artistry of this work, because there's always this lingering question, is it me and mine? Like, am I just making stuff up, or am I actually attuning in and this is something that's real, that's coming from the other person? And I don't think there's ever a definitive guide that says, yep, you're absolutely tuned into that person's deeper sense of self and you're not making any of this stuff up. Even me, after all these years, they can still have those moments of, is it me and mine? Where is it? But I think the ultimate signifier is a real sense of unity with that person at a core level of my being. Like, I feel deeply connected, not just at a thinking level, like, oh, you've had that experience. Oh, I've had that too. Not that. That's empathy. Or I know where you're coming from because I've had this experience as well. Just a real sense of absolute connection with the person. And there seems to be, in those moments, information in that field. Now, it's not necessarily words, maybe it's images or a sense. We're sensing. Transformational work for me is a sensing journey more than a thinking journey. And we're working with a sense that it's sometimes really hard to put words to it, but there's something there in that field, and I feel really close to that person. That's when I kind of know. And there's a sense of flow, like the session just flows. Okay. Like river, water flowing. Like, that's the feeling.
Yeah, beautifully answered. And again, I think because it's perhaps like beyond concept or it's emerging into our known awareness, it can be difficult. It's like it's difficult to put into words, isn't it? But you, like you said, you know it when you feel it, but at the same time, we can be we don't non-attached to it either. Not like we're saying, oh, I know what this is. It's the truth. It's more like, oh, is it like I'm sensing this,
Yes,
you know.
you got it right. I've sent there's
They might
something
be then
there. What's
like,
that?
ah,
Right. What's that? Not you're right, not to say that's the truth. Like, I picked it up and therefore it's true. But no, there's something there. And if it's meaningful for them, they'll pick it up and they'll work with it. If it's not meaningful, they'll just let it go. So it is. As long as you're not holding on to it, let it go. Move on to the next emergent piece.
Beautifully answered. And then the last question, and this is a big question, but what's your developmental edge at the moment?
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm at a really interesting point in my life right now, because for the last 10 years or so, I've been building the center and the work around deep transformational coaching. As you know, the book, it's been now published in five different languages, and it's continuing to be published in more. And it's kind of reaching new markets, as you could say, slowly, slowly, because it's all unfolding work versus driving, striving work. So we're allowing the unfolding of all of this in a very natural, organic way without having to really strive for anything. But it's been very developmental in that way. And I'm kind of sitting at this edge right now where I've just hired a managing director for the center to take over what had been my operational duties for many, many years. And I'm sitting with the question for me, for the first time in a long time, what's next? And this is an interesting place to land, because I've created a body of work that has been so absolutely fulfilling that I can hardly even conceive of a next. But there's something that's calling me. There's something that's calling me into my next iteration of my work, but I'm not clear on what it is yet. And it's going to require something of me that I'm not clear what it is yet. And so you asked me what my developmental edge is. It's an unknown. It's a foggy, vague sense of something without clarity around what it is. And for me, that's been a long time since I've sat in that. The last 10 years have been an unfolding, but always with a sense of intention and purpose towards what this could be. For the first time in a very long time, I'm sitting in a place of, I actually don't know. So my own edge is to really let this reveal itself to me, as I've done before, but this feels new. And it's hard to describe how it feels new, but there's something calling me to step maybe further into the world, you might say, as a teacher of this work in some form, but I'm not clear how or when.
Thanks for sharing that. It's interesting how, as you talk about it, I notice I've started to feel a sense of expansion and excitement. So yeah, there's something in what you express, you know, and I don't know if that's how you feel, but there's some sense of impact I get from you as you share about that, which is really enjoyable. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I'm really noticing I have to kind of, in a sense, return to, because it's a returning to a knowing of how I need to be through this uncertainty phase again. That's what it is. So my learning edge is to remember to return to what is deeply known, but not always lived, so that I can be through this as I know I need to be, which is to really ride the wave of uncertainty and unknowing, grounded, at peace, in absolute trust, and allow it to really be in a way that maybe I've never done before. And maybe the word is surrender. I need to surrender my life fully. And I'm not necessarily sure I've ever done that fully before. Like, just surrender. Maybe that's the best word for the learning edge.
Yeah. Just want to give that a moment. That's stunning. Leon, I want to ask you where we can find out more about your work. Could you? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The Center for Transformational Coaching. That's center with an ER. Center for Transformational Coaching, centerfortransformationalcoaching.com. And of course, our primary work is around the deep coaching, deep coach training. If people want to experience the work live, though, there's a page on the website called Deep Coaching Live or Deep Coaching Unplugged, where once, twice a month, we do live coaching sessions. People can actually hear deep coaching in action, which is a wonderful way to get experience with the work, either as somebody who might be seeking a coach or someone who is interested in understanding what we've been talking about today in so many different ways. So yeah, just visit the website and you can learn more about it.
Yeah, nice. That's a beautiful resource for people. I just want to thank you, Leon. I've really enjoyed our conversation and really appreciate the clarity with which you've articulated what transformational coaching is for you and the potency of it. So yeah, many thanks.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome, Joel. I love it. As you said at the beginning, kindred souls. And it's good to have this conversation with one. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training, The Neuroscience of Change. This program reveals the biology of change, showing us what happens in the brain and the body when different coaching techniques are used. You'll learn how to work with the innate pathways of change in all of us, so you can create powerful transformation with your clients. Just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by February the 7th.
Here we are, we're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.